Good morning, everybody. Very good to see you. I'm going to have some things on the screen as part of the sermon today, but you don't have to be able to see them. They're sort of extras in case you find that helpful. We are doing a new series for 3 weeks until we get to school term time, for those who notice school term time. And it's suggested by Chris and Maury, which is great. Three psalms over 3 weeks, and they're Psalms 22 to 24. They're a kind of trio. They are kind of poems, psalms of their own time, but they also point to Jesus, and they also guide us. So after hundreds of years of these being the psalms of the Jewish people, see, in recent times, these three psalms have been known to some Christians as the Psalm of the Cross, and the Psalm of the Crook, and the Psalm of the Crown. Somebody else worked those out, but they're very clever. I'm going to quote from a very old book called The Shepherd's Psalm by F.B. Meyer from 1889, who says, if the 22nd Psalm tells of the Good Shepherd who died, that will be the cross, and if the 24th tells of the Chief Shepherd who is coming again, that is the crown. The 23rd tells of the great shepherd who keeps his flock with unerring sagacity and untiring devotion. That's the shepherd's crook. So I'm going to preach on sagacity. No, I'm not this morning. That's an unusual word you haven't heard in a sermon recently. But anyway, so here we have three poems in their own right, from their own time, but also they point to Jesus. And also they're helpful for us. They help us to think about when God seems to be distant, how God leads us through our daily life, and how God leads us into his presence. So we'll dive into those, but first of all, I'm going to step back and just look at the whole thing of the Psalms. Poems of the Bible, that's what the Psalms are. Written by different people, but inspired by the Holy Spirit. They are different people's expression of themselves and how they are and where they are and what they want to say to God. What someone has called prayers to God that speak to us. There were lots of writers. Many of the Psalms say who they're written by when you go through them. And if you count them up, you'll find that David wrote 73 of them. Asaph wrote 12. He was around in Hezekiah's day. The sons of Korah wrote 11. Their father was a Levite. Two of them written by Solomon, one by Ethan, who might be the Ethan who's mentioned sounding the bronze cymbals before the ark as David brought it back into Jerusalem. And one of them is written by Moses, Psalm 90. 50 of them are anonymous, but clearly written by somebody, different times. Hezekiah wrote some psalms in his day. We know that. Don't know which ones. And they're written over a span of about 900 years. Moses through to the ones that mention Babylon and going into exile in the Babylon, as sung by Boney M a long time ago. Anyway, won't go there. So long stretch of time in which the Psalms were written. And they were written to be sung and with instruments. A lot of them, 55, are addressed to the chief musician. And some were there for particular occasions, like going up in procession to Jerusalem. We know that they were sung during the Old Testament. We know that actually New Testament Christians also used to sing psalms. There are references to that in a couple of the Bible letters, the epistles that we have in the New Testament. And despite primarily being prayers to God, which we can learn from, Jesus himself mentioned them as part of the prophetic works of the Old Testament, along with the law and the prophets. He says, everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. So we have these wonderful ancient poems and prayers, which Jesus highly valued, and they can be for us a wonderful source of material for our worship and for our daily lives. They give us words to say or to pray or to praise. They give us examples. They give us permission a lot of the time. And some are even able to be seen as part of the unfolding prophecy of God's work. And then it has to be said that there are some parts of the Psalms which are pretty troubling and not what we want to be reading in church, and we tend not to read them in church. And that's when we come across those in our own private reading, that's the time to remember that these are prayers prayed to God that can't always be held up as examples of godly thinking or the best things to ask or the best way to be, because actually these are people in their anguish expressing something to God, and they're not carefully thought through sometimes. But then our prayers are not carefully thought through sometimes, and these are prayers. So in the violent verses which you might come across, we see the anguish of the writer. We don't see the ways of God. So I want to look at Psalm 22, and then next week it'll be Psalm 23, and then Psalm 24. I'll be putting bits up on the screen, but you can ignore those if you want to. If you want to have the psalm open in front of you, I think that Audrey said it was 554 as the page number. First of all, the introduction. It is a song. It's to the director of music. It's got a tune, the Doe of the Morning. Like here, we say, that'll be to Woodlands, or that'll be to Nottingham. We tend to say that to Kevin, but I'm sure some other people know. Woodlands? What's sung to the tune Woodlands? Tell out my soul. And what about the tune Nottingham? Take my life and let it... Yeah, Jill knows. Yeah. Excellent. Right. So we do have the same sort of thing nowadays. You hear the tune, you go, oh, that'll be that tune. I know that one. It's a Psalm of David. And so it's written by him, first sung by him, maybe. He is the one that the King James Version of the Bible calls the sweet psalmist of Israel in 2 Samuel. And it starts by saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then we'll just stop there for a moment. Because who said that? Well, clearly, David said that. David wrote that. But are you immediately stopped short because you think, okay, this is the Psalm of David, but actually, those are the words of Jesus on the cross, like we just heard in our other passage in Mark 15. Jesus cried out in a loud voice from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Also the same you get in Matthew as well, one of the verses there. Jesus on the cross would have known that he was quoting this psalm and fulfilling it. But it's not just those words that link Psalm 22 to the events of that day. So first of all, in looking at Psalm 22, I want to look at Psalm 22 and Jesus. And Jesus on the cross specifically. Those with the eyes to see it on that day would have recognized all sorts of ways in which Psalm 22 was being played out, was being fulfilled in what was going on. So before they even reached the place of the crucifixion, Jesus was being mocked and insulted, as we hear in verse 7 of that psalm. And as he was crucified, his hands and his feet were pierced. And then his clothes were divided and lots were cast for them. And on the cross, as Matthew and Mark specifically say, that the people mocking him were shaking their heads at Jesus. The very phrase that's used in Psalm 22 in verse 7. And in Matthew, we read about people saying, surely God will save him if he trusts in him. It's an incredible parallel there between what's in the psalm and what's in the gospel passage, where people are saying, if God cares for him, he'll save him. Then we have John's gospel, where Jesus says, I am thirsty, just before he dies. And surely that is a reflection of the verse in the psalm which talks about Jesus being talks about the psalmist being thirsty. And at the end of the narrative in John's gospel, Jesus says, it is finished. And how similar that is to the end of Psalm 22 when we read, he has done it. And that's a Hebrew word, asah, which is very similar in what it means to the Greek word tetelestai, which Jesus says on the cross, both meaning it's finished, or it's accomplished, it's completed, it's done. That's what Jesus says on the cross. So as Christians, we can't read Psalm 22 without seeing Jesus in it, which is amazing because through hundreds of years, this psalm was sitting waiting there, prepared for the moments of Jesus' crucifixion. So it is a prophetic psalm, but that doesn't stop it from being a prayer of David's and also being a prayer that we can learn from. We can look at what David prayed and we can look at how that helped us, as well as this being an amazing prophetic psalm about Jesus on the cross. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to start by thinking about David and what David said. I'm going to put all the verses of the psalm up on the screen, but I'm not going to read them. My varifocals are making this slightly more complicated than I expected, but I won't tell you that. So the words will appear as we go through of the psalm, but I am very loosely paraphrasing it to try and get the feel of what David was saying as he was singing or reading or proclaiming this psalm. It's worth saying that we don't know exactly when it was that David wrote this, what the situation was that David was grappling with. There are some other psalms which say, this is a psalm of David when such and such happened. But in this case, we don't know. But we do know that he was clearly in a bad place. And his way of working with it is really helpful for us without knowing exactly what was going on. Maybe even helpfuler because we don't know exactly what was going on. David just tells it as it is, starting with honest anguish and pain, and then he ends up with a shout of God's victory. So David starts with those familiar words, my God, why have you forsaken me? Let me tell you how it is, God. It's horrible. I'm in anguish. You're not there for me. I can't sleep at night. I'm not getting answers. But he then goes on to think, I do remember our history as your people and the things that we believe and we tell stories about. In you, our ancestors put their trust. They cried out and were saved. This is stuff that David knows, and he thinks, I'm sure of this in the midst of what's going on with me. But, he says, I'm not worth that. I am a worm and not a man. I'm scorned, I'm despised, I'm mocked, I'm ridiculed, I'm insulted. That stuff doesn't apply to me. But then he does look at his own experience. He thinks about the things that are his belief, his experience. It was you who brought me to birth, and I trusted in you from the start. This I can remember. This is personal. So, in a sense, he cries out like that small child who first got to know the faith. He says, do not be far from me. I'm scared. I'm alone. He's kind of just saying, help, help me. Because, he goes back to it, because it feels bad. Because bulls surround and encircle me, because there are scary roaring lions, because I'm like water poured out, all my joints are out, my heart is wax, my mouth is dry, my tongue is stuck. I feel like they're killing me, you're killing me, it's really bad. Dogs are surrounding me, I'm injured, my bones are showing, my enemies gloat, my clothes are stolen and shared out. It's really bad. So, help me, God, he says. Don't be far away from me. Only you are my strength. Help me, save me from swords and dogs and lions and bull's horns. And then, quite rightly, Audrey paused because he kind of thinks at that moment. And then he says, then I will praise you in front of everyone because that's who I am. It'll be something like this. Hey, if you respect God, praise him. If you
All of you, you need to honour God. Show him respect. Holy respect. Because God didn't despise me or scorn me in my suffering. He didn't hide from me. He listened to my cry of help. This is what I can tell you from my bad times. And then he goes back to God. He says, "You're the one that I'll praise in front of everybody. I'll do the right thing. I'll tell them all about it. Because God," he says, "is the one who will satisfy the poor. God is the one who's worthy of praise, who everyone will one day turn to and bow down to, because God rules," kind of thing. This is who God is. And God is worth celebrating. He's worthy of worshipping. God and his righteousness will be remembered and talked about forever, because he has done it. He has done it. And whatever it was that David was grappling with, whether or not it was resolved, whether or not it had come to an end, whether or not he had got to a good place, he's worked through to a place when he could say that God has done it. So it's quite a roller coaster. And quite an amazing psalm to think of David saying that, and yet so familiar in a sense what's going on there. I'm going to leave it like that for David, and I'm going to go straight on to think about us, but I do feel that we need to kind of rewind, to stop and settle, to get our breath back, because it's one thing to hear about the unknown thing that David was grappling with, and in the end he got to his high note, but that's not what it's like when we're back at verse 1. My God, why have you forsaken me?" So I'm just going to pause for a moment. My God, why have you forsaken me?" They are strong words. God seems far from me. He's not listening. He's not there. He's not responding. That's a tough place to be. Some of you will know that place. Some of you may have been close to that place. Maybe some of you haven't dared to admit that you've been in that place, or even that you are in that place. It's not something that we like to talk about. It's something that makes us feel, oh, we've muffed it, if that's how we're feeling. I would point out that it's David who wrote this psalm that starts with these words, and that it's Jesus who used those words on the cross. So actually, if those are your words right now, you're in good company with some seriously inspiring people. In fact, the people who are at the heart of our faith. We can say, "Why have you forsaken me?" We can tell God how it is. We don't have to pretend. And we might be there for a long time. It might be a bad situation. It might be illness or loss for yourself or for someone else. It might be prayers that haven't been answered, pain that doesn't go away, hopes that have been dashed, opportunities that have gone. We don't have to gloss over it. We can be real. Did you notice that through the psalm, David actually kept coming back to the bad stuff? He needs God's saving, then he isn't getting it. He doesn't see it. He has fear. He's overwhelmed. And he keeps coming back to the bad stuff and bringing it to God again. And even when he gets a bit more positive, even when he gets a better perspective on it for a while, he's thrown back again to say, "Yeah, but it's all really bad." He doesn't shy away from that. He keeps spilling it out to God. In fact, he knows that he can. He says in verse 24, "For God has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help." That's how God will listen to you in that dark place. He won't scorn or despise your suffering. He will listen. He won't hide his face from you. That way, maybe that place of feeling forsaken, that may be where we are for a long time. And moving on from that will be different for each circumstance and for each person. And there's a whole lot of Christian life lived that would take us through that or help us to make our way through that. And I'm not going to try and preach all of that, no way. But I do want to look at what David did and said, not for his own sake, but now for our sake, and think about the possible steps there. David says, "Why have you forsaken me, God?" That's where he starts. "Let me tell you how it is." Then he says, "I will remember the things of faith that I share with other people." Let's find my way through this. So he starts with honesty. And then he says, "I'm going to remember some things I share with other people." And we can do that. Remember the things that we share. Those things that other people can help us with sometimes. It'd be a good place to be. It's not so personal to say, if we say, "Oh, I believe this and I'm sure of that." That's not where we are when we're saying, "God, why have you forsaken me?" But we can maybe say, "Do you know what? We believe, Christians believe, and I'm going to stick with that. I am a Christian. I do believe that we believe this." That is a good place to be. Good place to get to. I'm going to hold on to that, even though it's hard. But then maybe like David, you find your mind saying, "Yes, it's all right for other Christians. It's okay for them, but I'm not the same. I'm a worm and not a man." That's what David said. Well, that's what we say. It's different for me. I'm worse than that. I've got it wronger than that. We can so easily do that. And David did. But he stops that unhelpful train of thought by thinking of the things that he can look back to and say, "Yeah, but God did do that. I do remember that." Personal stuff rather than general stuff. The general stuff gets him started, but the personal stuff makes him think about his own things that he can remember that God has done for him. And we can do that too. Very honest. But just say, "Well, this I can hold on to." And David goes on back to say, "Yeah, but it's really bad," and he talks about the bad stuff again. That's fine. But he does finally end up talking about praising God in the assembly. And because he's David, he's always at the front of the assembly. And so when he talks about it, he talks about encouraging other people to praise. But we're not David. And if we're not David, then actually this is simply about being with other Christians and singing along with the songs that we're singing and listening to the stuff that we're praying and finding that that brings some life to us again. Being with other Christians, it can be a way in which we find ourselves again, find our faith again, having been completely honest with God, having been completely real about things. We can be as desperate as we really are to God, but we can find quite often that we can be held in the faith of the church. Finally, David talks about the ways of God and the things of God's kingdom. This is big stuff. This is way bigger than David can do. This is way bigger than any of us can do. But this is saying, "But I believe that God is like this. These are his kingdom ways." That's what we'd say as Christians. "And I do believe this is the sort of thing he does. I do believe this is the sort of thing he wants to put right. I do believe that he wants to sort this and that and the other and these things in the world. I do believe this." And we trust that it will happen in God's big picture. We don't know the timing. We don't know how. But we do know that God can do it. And maybe that's where we get to say, "He has done it." So that's very, very briefly talking about how David's prayer might help us when we find ourselves on that same starting verse. And yet, it'll be different ways for different people. And certainly I would say it involves talking with other Christians, praying with others, asking others to pray when you can't. There may be things that you can read if you're a reader of books. Look out for things. There's one that we've had for a while, which Nikki was talking about, Pete Gregg, last week. His surname looks like it's Grieg, but it's Gregg, actually. He's the guy who started the 24/7 prayer movement. And he's got this book called God on Mute, which is about when God doesn't answer prayer. On the one hand, he was setting up the 24/7 prayer movement, and on the other hand, his wife was ill in a way that God, you know, God wasn't listening. And so he talks very honestly about that. There's some good people you can read, and there's some good people you can talk with, and we're together in this, because you'll be surprised how many more people have been on that first verse of that psalm than you would have thought, because we tend not to talk about it. And I'm going to, there could be so much more to say, which I'm not going to now. Don't miss opportunities to talk. If something's been opened up that you need to talk about, then find somebody to talk to. Don't miss the opportunity a bit later when we have our healing prayer time. There's certainly something that needs God's presence, God's shalom. And so maybe you will come forward when you weren't expecting to, and without, you don't need to explain why you're there when you come up to the front here for prayers for healing, but you will get anointed with oil and a prayer for God's work in your life. And maybe that's why you'll come forward today to say, yep, I'm at that place and I just want to be real about it, and start on that walk back, however long that might take. I'm going to finish with verse 24 again. It's not on the screen, just have to listen to it. This is David. He says, "For God has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him or her, but has listened to their cry for help." Amen.